Hey friends, welcome to the Reside Podcast. I'm Brooke, your host. If you are a new listener, I'm so happy that you found your way to the show. Today, guys, is part two of my conversation with Michelle Dawson, a very good friend of mine. We're talking about everyone's favorite topic, change. I am going to be really honest. I absolutely suck at change. I dread it, and I feel like when it comes my way, I just do not handle it well at all. Michelle has a lot of wisdom to speak into change and seasons of change. She's encountered a lot of it over her life so far, moving from Texas to overseas in Italy and then back to a different town where her and her family didn't know anyone. We talk a lot about how do you know when it's time to make a change? I know that's definitely a question that I've asked before in my life and probably many of you too. We also dive into how our values influence our decision making, especially if our values change over time, which is something that definitely holds true to me. We recorded this episode back in January and I cannot believe that it's April already. It's been a long time coming, but Michelle shares a really cool story about the poet laureate at the inauguration back in November and what kind of impact that it left on her family. So this is a jam-packed episode and I am just so excited to share it with you guys today. Without further ado, here is my second conversation, or part two of my conversation with Michelle. We've talked a lot about like connections and community building. I would love to talk a little bit about navigating seasons of change. I think that goes hand in hand with community. And oh, I totally forgot to tell you, my sister is moving to Houston.
Yay!
I'm so excited.
So exciting. Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yay. I'm so excited. But yeah. So I totally forgot to tell you that. But I was talking with her the other day. So she's obviously entering into a season of change locationally. And she was talking to me about how she's sad and happy at the same time. There's kind of this juxtaposition of like, I don't want to leave Austin because I love it and I have so many friends, but I know that Houston is my next step and where I need to be. And so we were just talking about how it's okay to like live in both of those feelings at the same time. You know, you've navigated a couple of different seasons of change and I feel like you would probably, I don't know, what are your thoughts on that? I feel like you've navigated some of that. So,
well, I'm excited. That's going to be so fun for her.
I'm so pumped.
Change is a scary thing. I think it's really normal to experience like kind of some dual emotions. Right. Happy and sad at the same time.
Yeah.
When we were moving to Italy, we went through some training stuff on moving overseas. And one of the things they said really stuck with me about moving on, they said that you have to really say goodbye well to the place that you live in order to say hello well to the place that you're going. And they were talking specifically in the context of like having like little kids, but for adults too, but like with little kids, like, you know, obviously more literally like drive around and say bye to the fun playground and give them a little minute of like recognizing like this change is real. Like don't just push past those uncomfortable feelings. Like let yourself feel that sadness, right? Let yourself go to the restaurant you love the very most. Take another long walk at the place that like has been a source of beauty to you. Like sit and watch the sunset over the skyline one more time. Like give yourself the gift of time to, you know, reflect upon what that place has meant to you and to feel the feelings you need to, and to say your actual goodbyes to people that live there and green to, you know, for your sister, she's moving from Austin. So it's not like she's not going to see her again, but it is a distinct moment, you know, like a move is, you don't see the people every day anymore. So it is something that your day to day life is going to be happening in a different place.
Right.
And so I think taking the time to, you know, it doesn't have to be elaborate, but just a simple, like, thanking the people that have meant so much to you in your daily life, thanking the, you know, I don't know, just making sure you end it well and don't just run away, right? Because our tendency is to like, we come up against something that's awkward or uncomfortable or makes you feel things you don't, you wish you weren't feeling. So you just right. go, oh, and especially in a move because you're so busy with the logistics of getting it out the door, you don't yeah. take the time to really let yourself sit with the feeling of that moment. Right. It doesn't have to yeah. be dramatic, but just long enough for you to right. go, this place was important to me and I'm hopeful about it. But I think in that way, you have a little bit of closure and can move on season with an open mind and heart, knowing that you haven't fled or abandoned the city. You haven't yeah. run away from a difficulty. You haven't, you know, you've, yeah. you appreciate, and maybe you have, maybe you've fled from a bad situation. maybe life has been really yeah. hard. You felt like you need to get up and run. And that's okay too, but just making sure that internally you're not stuffing those ugly feelings, that you're letting yourself sit with that discomfort, even if you only manage it for a few minutes at a time. So that you have an open mind about what's next.
Sometimes, maybe in my own head, I don't know if others feel this way, but I feel like I've always had this kind of mindset that if it's good, why would I change it and why would I leave? And I know that's always not the case. Probably, you know, more times than not, like you're leaving behind lots of good things, all good things, even if it's a job change, like it could have still been a great job that you're leaving behind or whatever. So how do you know when it's time to make a change?
That's a tough question. I'm not sure every person could answer this question the same way. I think obviously lots of circumstances. I think for us, there's been somewhat of an intuition about it, kind of a feeling that a chapter was coming to a close. Now, I have had that intuition when the chapter did not close. So don't base it all on feelings. I would say that, you know, if you start to think that change is coming, I would say to sit with that for a little bit. Let it sort of percolate, right? Don't make big sweeping statements about what you will or won't do. Just let yourself stop and think about it quietly, right? My tendency when I start to sense change is to want to just talk about it with everybody. Call everybody I know and get their opinion. And yeah. it's sort of like asking for like people's opinions on baby names while you're still pregnant. It's like, it's not the best idea because you don't actually want necessarily to know their opinion. Like it
right.
isn't your choice. And I feel like it's kind of the same way about those initial stages of deciding what's next or that it's time to change. It's like you kind of have to like do a little bit of internal work on your own. Like, and whether that looks like, for me, that looks like taking long runs and taking while I'm running or taking long walks or, you know, I do like to journal. Not everybody's a journaler, but writing out ideas, doing pro-con charts. I think some of it is like values. Like at some point in your life, you need to sit down and think through, if you've got one precious life on this earth, like, what do I want?
Yeah.
What will happen with it? You know? And then as you make decisions, and maybe this is further along once you know you're going to make a change. But even deciding to make a change, you have to stop and ask yourself, like, are the choices I'm making in line with the things that I value? So what do I want out of my life? And am I making the choices necessary to create that life for myself? And I recognize that's a privileged position. Not everybody has. Not everybody has freedom to fully decide how they, you know?
Absolutely.
But often, very often, we do have more ability to maneuver things in our life than we give ourselves credit for, right? We box ourselves in instead. So sometimes, you know, maybe it's a personal or a silent alone retreat that you take once a year by yourself to stop and analyze what your priorities are. Maybe if you're married, maybe it's a planning date you take once a year where you stop and go like, okay, where are we at?
Yeah.
What do we want? Are we making progress towards the things we want to make progress towards? Are there areas we need to unstick ourselves a little bit? And, you know, so some of that's just doing the intentional work of reflecting on your life.
Yeah. Taking inventory of the things that are important to you and what around you. Yeah. Absolutely.
And when it comes to actually making the choice, I think there's, you know, we had these mentors when we were in Italy that had this like very elaborate way of making decisions that was actually, it was fantastic. And I could not fully explain it to you if I wanted to. But essentially it was this idea of like really thinking through your values and prioritizing them.
Yeah.
Writing them all down like a big brain dump, right? Because we have some priorities that end up being like, for whatever reason, whatever kind of emotional reason, they end up being the thing that sort of blocks our vision from seeing the rest of our life. So mm-hmm. you might have always thought in your mind, like in the back of your mind, that you would never leave Texas.
Yeah.
Right. I'll live in Texas forever. Now, when you act, as you grow up, I don't know, maybe that's just something, or maybe it's like something your parents used to say to you, like you, they see you as somebody who would be a teacher or a helper or whatever. Mm-hmm. You have that idea in your mind, but it can end up like blocking your vision to what you're actually wanting to do with your life. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I think sometimes it helps to just dump it all in the paper. And then as you look at the paper of the things that are impacting your decision, you can choose. What I actually want to make my decision on is this. Like I want to make my decision on where I live based on these top three things. And yeah. that really matters to me. Now, the fact that it means that I'm probably going to live outside of Texas, like, okay.
Like, yeah.
Now I have to put that in its proper place. Like
right.
I need to take it from blocking my vision to
right.
and like set it down underneath intentionally. And,
right.
But anyway, the mm-hmm. those that mentor couple to us talked us through their whole system, and we've used it on every major decision we've made. So essentially you come up with your values, you rank your values, and then you evaluate each choice by how much they live, how much that choice fits in with those values, right? So say I value like living on a street where it's easy for me to run.
Yeah.
So we have, you know, four different houses that we're looking at. Two of them are like right next to the highway and they're terrible, like not safe neighborhoods to run. But two of them are like, and so I, so then you actually rank them and there's a whole numerical system and you sort of like literally like, like multiply the thing out. Right. You end up with ranking.
Like what's the weight here of, yeah.
Yes, you weigh, it's all weighted. So anyway, and I'm sure if you Google, you can find lots of different decision-making like factors. Like
yeah.
But yeah, that actually has been helpful once we've had the decision. It has not been helpful making the decision whether or not to change. I feel like that's sort of more of a gut prayer, you know, just yep. something you know with
yep.
time and eventually with the insights of your, you know, people that know you really well and
yeah.
can speak some truth into it. But yep. once you know, I think there's 1,000 decisions that need to be made that you can carefully, methodically even, you know,
yeah.
work through some decision making on.
Absolutely. I think those are all really good things. And I think that at least for me, sometimes my values have changed depending on mm-hmm. my life too. So
yeah.
I've definitely done that exercise before and it's been neat mm-hmm. to kind of check in on that every once in a while and mm-hmm. be like, oh, this was really important to me, but mm-hmm. now maybe not so much. And yeah. this is more important to me now.
That's really natural. Like we're at a season right now where schools for our kids matter a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now that's like a heavy measure of our decision making and
right.
it kind of has to be, but it won't be forever.
Yeah.
And it wasn't 5 years ago, you know,
yeah.
when they were little. Yeah. I think that's normal for your priorities yeah. and your needs to change.
Sure. You know? Cool. I have one more thing that I want to talk to you about. I saw your post on your Instagram watching Amanda Gorman do the poetry reading with Elizabeth, and it just gave me the chills. Would you be okay talking about that a little bit?
Yeah, I would love to. Oh, that was such a special moment. Like I said, I'm homeschooling my kids this year, and so we actually just made that the day, and we set the inauguration on the screen and had my kids watch it. And my daughter Elizabeth, who's 7 now, has apraxia of speech, like childhood apraxia of speech, which is, it's a neurological condition that affects the part of your brain that controls the way your mouth moves, so the motor function of your mouth. And it can also be global, meaning it affects how you move your body, mm-hmm. your ability. So basically your brain, you know, most of us, our brain tells our mouth to say this word and our mouth just says it without any problems. But for her, she will think the word perfectly in her head, but her mouth, it can't do the complicated maneuvers that it needs to say that word correctly. And so the only way to actually deal with apraxia is to do just tons and tons and tons of, you basically have to teach them how to form their mouth. Mm-hmm. So when she was little, we actually had hand signals, hand signs for sounds. Yeah. So like we would like put our three fingers over our lips to make the N sound. Mm. Mm-hmm. And she would do them too as she said the sound. It was like a cue. And in that way, it built neural passageways. Mm. It was physically doing it with her hand at the same time as her mouth made it. Help build that neural pathway. So anyway, she's been in speech for many, many years now and has really struggled to, she's doing wonderfully, but it has been such a struggle to get her to be able to communicate. Like it just takes so much longer than normal. And, you know, I remember when she was three or four, my son, when he was three or four, Bennett would just, he was a nonstop talking, like every thought he had, nonstop, you know, just like, so verbal. You would know every dream when he woke up in the morning, every imaginative idea he had, everything came out. And I remember looking in her little eyes and thinking, that same amount of like creativity is in that little brain. Can't get it out of her mouth. Mm. And when she tries, people lose attention because it takes so long for her to express herself. So I would make a habit when she was little of like crawling in bed with her. And for some reason, like in the dark room where there's not any distractions and it was like quiet and I didn't have anywhere else to go, wasn't in a hurry, she could talk to me in a way that was clear and I could wait. I had the time. I wasn't in a hurry. I wasn't trying to like answer my phone and respond to a text and cook dinner at the same time as she's trying to tell me the story, right? Yeah. This was only her time. And so we did that for a year. I still do it sometimes. Not every day. She's getting better. But anyway, it's just been such a journey to get her to be able to express herself. Yeah. So Amanda had that, the poet laureate who was 22 years old, who spoke, she had a speech condition, not exactly the same one, but a similar issue with communication. And of course, Joe Biden, you know, is frequently made fun of for his speech impediment with stuttering, which, you know, he's had since he was a little boy and he has fought through it. And so many other people with disabilities have so much courage to continue to enter and put themselves out into this world. I could tell from the very first moment she started speaking, you know, her diction was really clear during that poem at the inauguration. And I looked down and Elizabeth is like doing her little hands. Like so the poet, while she was speaking, she had this beautiful way that she was like moving her hands with the poem in a very artistic and dramatic way.
Right.
And I just looked down and Elizabeth is like literally mimicking with her little fingers the whole thing with the entire poem. And then I found out later that she had a speech impediment when she was a child too. And so it just felt like a moment of possibility to me of like what was possible for her growing up and seeing role models, women. People who have had to fight through difficulties to get where they've been, you know, a woman of color, just a variety of like beautiful things that I thought, oh, I'm so glad she has.
You posted that she was mimicking the hand movements. And I was like, oh man, I bet that's such a cool mom moment. And I just wanted to ask you about it.
I got on my phone and was like, I'm going to take a video. And of course, the moment she realized I was videotaping, she stopped right away. I shouldn't have got my phone out.
That's so special.
It was so sweet.
That's really good.
She's going to be just fine. She's a brave little soul, man. She doesn't sound like the other kids her age, but boy, she's
amazing.
I sometimes wonder, you know, people that have really struggled to get their words out, I wonder what their little life is going to turn into, what kind of like pearl, that pressure, the diamond that pressure is going to make.
Mm,
you know, there's something in that early childhood struggle and the need to like be courageous. We often say, and we obviously didn't coin this, I don't remember where I heard it, but she says it every day. I make her say, I can and I will. The things she's scared of, and I have to say to myself too, that I can and I will, I can and I will. Sometimes she, I can't and I won't. I can't and I won't, Mom. It's okay. You can have a day off. But tomorrow we can and we will.
And she does. She's a cool kid. Oh my goodness. I can't wait to see what she's going to do. Both of them. Your whole family. It's a joy to know you guys, really.
Well, we are so thankful that you moved to Beaumont and your place is really missing in this town.
Well, Michelle, it's been so fun talking to you today. This was your first time on the show. Hopefully not your last. I feel like
I'm so glad I could come.
Learn something new every time, but it's just really a joy to know you. And thanks for being on the show.
Aw, thanks, Brooke. The feeling is very, very mutual.
Okay, guys, I hope that today's episode just filled you up. Michelle and all of her wisdom just is always such a blessing to me. So I'm grateful that she was able to share her experience and her wisdom with you guys too. I love in this episode when she was talking about change and she said, you have to say goodbye well to the place you live in order to say hello well to the place you're going. I think that's so true. And that was just something that really stuck with me. Guys, thanks for listening to the Reside podcast. The show is just so near and dear to my heart. And the more I talk to people who are just rocking it in their own space and cultivating community in their own unique ways, it just makes me so, so excited to continue with this podcast. So thanks for being a listener. I hope that as we celebrate stories about how people are cultivating community in their own spaces, that you're inspired to do that very same thing in your own space and in your own community. I can't end a show without saying if you are loving the show, guys, go share the show with a friend, share a favorite episode maybe, leave a review on iTunes, check out my Instagram page at Reside Podcast. Let me know what you're loving. Any of those things would just be so meaningful to me if you're loving the show. That is all that I have for you guys this week. I'll see you back in 2 weeks, April 27th, for a really fun conversation with Alicia Tillman of Awkward Yoga Girl. We talk about all things yoga and she has such a fun story to share. I know that you guys will not want to miss this one. Aside from that, have a great week and see you back in 2 weeks. Goodbye for now.